From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I am your host, Hunter Dusing, and with me today is Mr. John Denver himself, John Grace.
Howdy.
Howdy. How's James Elroy doing?
Pretty good. I'll be seeing James Saturday night. He's presenting Nashville.
That sounds really good.
Yeah.
To hear him talk about that. I've only seen that movie once. Thought it was all right. Probably would appreciate it more if I was a hippie in the 60s or whatever. But
yeah, it's an odd choice from Elroy.
Yeah.
He's pretty right wing.
He is. But, you know, that movie has some things I think people that are interesting about it.
Right.
But anyway. So today, this is a very last minute show. John said, let's either do one of two movies with Ralph Meeker. You didn't say with Ralph Meeker, but I felt it was implied.
Right.
There was Kiss Me Deadly,
yep.
Which part of me thought we'd done that one, but I don't think we have.
I haven't done it with.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think I did. I don't think
might
I did.
Have done it with Stu.
I don't think so.
Okay.
And then the other one, the one we're going to do today, is The Naked Spur, Anthony Mann's Western with Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah.
Who is in one of his darker roles. Mm-hmm. You know, you think of Jimmy Stewart, you think It's a Wonderful Life, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, you think Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
Yeah.
In this movie, Jimmy Stewart is a pretty dark, violent dude.
Yeah. He's and I should say, I actually enjoy Jimmy in these roles more than Mr. American Cornball.
Oh, totally. You know, and I like the cornball stuff. It's fun to watch with the family at Christmas. But but Jimmy, you would not think that Jimmy Stewart could play such a dark role when you watch those. But when you watch this movie, I remember. So how did you discover this movie, John? Because, you know.
Okay, it gets dropped a lot when you read about Western, because they always like to talk about Anthony Mann.
Yeah, because Anthony Mann's like, he's the pre New Hollywood, pre Peckinpah, he's the dark Western guy.
Right, right. You know? And him and Bud Bedecker or whatever, although I don't think Bud's stuff is nearly as dark as Anthony Mann. Like Anthony Mann.
Like because Anthony Mann also did like The Furies.
Yeah.
Man from the West. Gosh, I'm blanking on some of the other ones. Winchester 73. That's another one with Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah, yeah.
10 Star.
Mm-hmm. Plus, he did war films. He did a lot of stuff.
Yeah, he did some war movies and some noir.
And he did, I think he did Charlton Heston's 55 Days at Peking.
Well, and he did a couple of big epics, like El Cid and Fall of the Roman Empire.
Yeah, he liked working with Heston.
Yeah.
And Heston liked working with
Which,
him.
Which, if you don't like working with Heston, fuck you.
Exactly. I finished Charlton Heston's autobiography last week,
mm-hmm.
and they talked about the whole Ice-T cop killer controversy.
Oh yes,
and Heston,
which I want to hear Heston read the lyrics to.
Oh yeah, I'm sure you can find it on YouTube.
I've got my black gloves on. I've got my ski mask on. My headlights are off. Whatever, I don't know the lyrics, so he's like, I'm going to kill some cops.
I'm going to dust some cops off.
I'm getting ready to dust.
Got a 12-gauge sawed off.
I got my 12-gauge sawed off.
Better you than me, cop killer. But he
fuck police brutality.
Yeah, he considered highly offensive. And he didn't know why. He said the only reason Warner Brothers was released again was for the cash. And because records still made money.
Oh,
back
I
then.
Remember when it happened because my parents were pissed about it. Because they
yeah.
And I remember my mom and dad reading his speech.
Like, yeah, I think my mother wasn't too shocked when she heard about it because she one of my NWA Straight Outta Compton tape got stuck in the car. She heard "fuck the police." Like, Boy, was she quietly confront me about that the next day. But
and you were
so,
like,
so it was, I mean, well, Cop Killer is pretty light compared to that. So
yeah, I mean, Cop Killer is like openly advocating murdering the police.
But somebody had said, well, Chuck, you're probably never going to work for Warner Brothers again. He goes, that's okay. I'll never have to pay for another traffic ticket.
That's okay. Yes. Never have to pay for another traffic ticket.
I mean, you know, it's funny because you look at his career and it's just quality. He really read his – he was an actor that read his scripts.
Yes, he did.
And he,
like,
he had to have something for the work or he didn't do it. You know?
And even the stuff people think of as cheesy, like the Omega Man or Soylent Green, that shit's good.
It is.
Like, oh, Children of Men, fuck you. Go watch Soylent Green. That movie did that sort of – that type of future first. You know?
Yeah, way better too.
Yeah, like that scene where James L. Robinson goes and dies is so powerful.
Yeah.
And Robinson was James G. Robinson, excuse me.
Oh, are you talking about Edward G. Robinson?
Edward G. Robinson. Why,
you're talking about that. I think you're mentioning the comic book artist or writer, James Robinson.
Yeah, sorry.
Edward G. Robinson.
Edward G. Robinson, and that was his last film.
Yeah.
And he was dying of cancer, and he didn't tell anybody.
Yeah.
And he told, and during his death scene, when Heston watches him go through assisted suicide, he said, listen, I'm going to be dead in a few months. I've got cancer. I'm going to die. And he told him that right before that scene. And you can see it on Heston's face during that scene. It's powerful.
Yeah, I gotta watch that again.
Yeah, it's a great movie. I watched it for the first time recently, and I was like, man,
really?
This is really good.
I haven't seen it since I was a kid, and it aired on, for some reason, one summer, Cinemax aired like Charlton Heston sci-fi movies all summer.
Yeah, and his
sci-fi movies like Soylent Green and Planet of the Apes and Omega Man, and it was consistent. It was furious.
Planet of the Apes. I just love what a fucking prick Heston's character is in Planet of the Apes.
Taylor. Yeah, and he mentioned that. He said the character's a misanthrope.
He is. He's like,
he hates people.
And he was like, he was disappointed when that girl dies on the played because he was like, she was to be our new Eve. She was going to help us repopulate the planet. It's like, oh great, we're all going to take turns having babies with this.
I know. I was watching it, watching it with my kid for the first time, and because he's really into the Twilight Zone, so he's this is written by Rod Serling, and it's got apes.
It's a feature-length Twilight Zone episode.
Right, I'm watching. I was like, didn't this get a G rating in 1968?
it's shockingly dark.
Yeah,
so is the sequel, Beneath the Planet of the Apes.
Conquest is pretty vicious, too.
Conquest, I mean, yeah, and what was it, Escape?
Yeah.
Like, the way that one ends up I forget the two apes that are played by...
Cornelius
and Zira.
Yeah.
Their death scene is so like, ugh, you know? And the poor little kid that gets taken in by Ricardo Montalban, you know? Caesar, little baby Caesar. But,
they basically creating the whole Planet of the Apes.
And even a shitty movie like Battle for the Planet of the Apes, you can see like early Mad Max in that movie with the way they repurpose cars, bikers, and school buses and all that stuff.
Oh, definitely. George Miller, I think, was a fan of all that stuff.
Yeah, totally.
And especially comic books. Because I swear, every comic book writer that created a post-apocalyptic comic book in the 70s, Spain Rodriguez and Don McGregor. Spain Rodriguez did Trash Man. Don McGregor did Saber, and both of them had that kind of post-apocalyptic, futuristic world. And apparently both said that they were approached by a company from Australia trying to buy the rights to their comic. And they believe it was the people doing Mad Max.
That's funny.
Like, there was an inquiry, hey, or would you sell the rights? They're like, nah, what are you talking about? You know, of course, nowadays, any comic creator would be like, yes, I'll sell you the rights.
Yes, 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 make a movie, make me famous.
It's like, in fact, the only reason people do comic books now, I think, is basically to sell movie rights.
Please, but... please, please let Robert Rodriguez read this.
Yes. And, it's funny because the Planet of the Apes, it's weird because when I was a little kid, those were actually forgotten. by the time I was watching TV and movies.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was about 76, 77. Those were already gone. Those already seemed like they were years before. It's
well,
weird.
And when I heard about Planet of the Apes when I was a kid, it was always like, yeah, the first movie's good, but each sequel's worse than the last, you know.
Yeah.
It was always like they kind of had this bad reputation for, you know, being the when you talked about the law of diminishing returns.
Right.
People that was Planet of the Apes was synonymous with that.
Yeah. And they were not shown on TV very much. I didn't see them until Cinemax aired them in the 80s.
Which is kind of weird because that predated Star Wars in terms of merchandising. Like they had Planet of the Apes board games and figures and stuff.
And I swear by the late 70s it was gone. It was almost like that was like, I think as a kid I felt like, oh, that must have been way before my time, and it wasn't. You know, I was in the crib when those were airing on TV and in theaters, but it's weird. I mentioned how, you know, we talked about the Jim Goad quote about how rockabilly was further away
from was closer to punk than we are.
Right,
to punk
right. It was
now.
Closer to punk, but like we're still not over punk, and it's been decades. And it's weird how time would just jump in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah,
like something like Planet of the Apes felt like an old movie in 1977.
Yeah, I mean it was like, oh, we got Star Wars now. Fuck right. Planet of the Apes. You
know? Exactly. It was just like everything was forgotten.
Why do you want to watch that old shit?
Right, right. We were like China.
Yeah.
Like, those are old movies. They're terrible. That's what everybody is over there. But yeah, it's like, but with the Naked Spur, it's funny you watch this and it's kind of like, this might have actually been the first like all outdoors Western.
It was funny. I was watching it again because I'd seen this movie before, but I was kind of wanting to revisit it, and when you brought it up, I was like, well, I'd rather do this.
Oh, wait, I forgot to mention, I did first watch this VHS tape.
Oh, wow.
And you know, here's the funny thing.
Yeah, I was asking how you got into it.
And somehow we got into Heston, but the Apes. Tangent! But,
it happens.
No, it's like, I watched it on VHS in like 2001, 2002, and I liked it, but here's the odd thing, I watched the DVD the other day, and I swear, the VHS tape looked better.
Yeah, the DVD looks like shit.
I am not kidding. The something about the Technicolor remastering they do for DVDs makes the Technicolor smear like pastel.
Yeah, it doesn't look good.
And it doesn't look like that on VHS at all.
Well, because, and I was like, is this on Blu-ray? Like, I was looking for, like, a better version of it. Because I remember it didn't look that great.
Right.
And I found out about this movie because Scorsese talked about it on the BFI's Martin Scorsese's Personal Journey Through American Cinema.
Right.
And he spent a lot of time on Anthony Mann, and he talked about the Naked Spur. And I remember I was like a teenager when I saw this documentary, and I saw this clip where the villain gets brained at the end by the floating log in the river, and Stewart drags his body out and is screaming about, I don't care about the money, I don't care, you know. And I remember seeing that and going, holy shit, like I've never seen James Stewart act like this in a film. And I was like, I have to see this movie.
Right.
And I couldn't find it anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually it came out on DVD, and that's when I saw it for the first time. And the DVD looks bad, but I was just happy to see it. Because
right.
A good movie is a good movie, even if it looks like shit, you know, you're still watching a good film.
Exactly. And there's some bad-looking DVDs out there, really good movies.
Of course. And, you know, but, you know, you take what you can get.
Exactly.
I remember watching it, and that documentary also turned me on to Anthony Mann, because Scorsese, of course, loves dark shit. Look at his movies.
Right.
And so he particularly pointed to movies like The Furies and The Naked Spur as great unsung Westerns.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how I came to Anthony Mann, and that's how I came to The Naked Spur. But I just remember seeing that clip and seeing Jimmy Stewart, Mr. It's a Wonderful Life, Mr. Frank Capra, you know, and just going, oh my gosh, like Jimmy Stewart's like Clint Eastwood in Unforgiven, sign me up.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually you think of him, he's like Norman Rockwell dad.
Totally. Like he seems like something from a Norman Rockwell painting, and you're just
right.
Like, and then this movie, he's this, like, okay, so let's set up the story. Naked Spurt, Jimmy Stewart plays, he plays this kind of cynical bounty hunter.
Yeah.
You know, on the, it's like Montana, I think. Mm-hmm. Or is it Colorado? No, it's Colorado.
It was filmed in Colorado. Yeah, I wasn't 100% on the setting. But
no, you're right. It's Colorado, because I remember at the end of the film it says filmed on location in Colorado.
It was filmed in Durango, which is almost borders to New Mexico.
And he is on the – he's hunting a old acquaintance who's wanted. And when he's hunting him, he comes across an old prospector and a – played by Millard Mitchell.
Yeah.
And he plays and he comes across a Union lieutenant played by Ralph Meeker, who stars in Kiss Me Deadly. Ralph Meeker's great in this, by the way.
Yeah, yes.
Smirking kind of jerk. But and he's tracking this guy played by Robert Ryan, and when they encounter him, he's accompanied by Hollywood legend Janet Leigh.
Yeah.
And they capture this guy played by Robert Ryan, Ben, and he tries to sow discontent. Like, because here's the thing, Jimmy Stewart's hunting this guy. He doesn't let on how much he's worth. And this guy tells them, and they all want an equal share. And so his strategy to get out, it's them transporting him through the frontier. And Jimmy Stewart is trying to get this guy to get the reward money. And meanwhile, Robert Ryan's character is trying to pit the prospector and Ralph Meeker's Union lieutenant against him. Again, he's trying to pit them against each other so that they'll kill each other and he can escape with Janet Leigh. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Jimmy Stewart starts to fall in love with Janet Leigh's character because, you know. That's how these movies go.
She's great looking.
Yeah, she's Janet fucking Leigh. Like,
she's great looking. Has an awesome rack, which was the whole reason. And she's starring in movies.
And she's got like really cute short hair in this movie too. Yeah. You know,
exactly.
She looks great.
She's gorgeous.
Janet Leigh is. Like, I remember when I was a kid, I thought she was one of when. When I was a kid, I would have told you who's the most beautiful woman in like movies. I would have said Janet Leigh when I was a kid because I thought she was so pretty. Like,
well, if you watch the Vikings, where she's the sort of Viking.
Princess. Yes, 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 yes. I got the Blu-ray of the Vikings.
And then Kirk Douglas asked for advice from Ernest Borgnine what he should do. He's like, "You take her."
Yeah, of course. That's what
you take her. You just take her.
I know this girl who's a big Janet Leigh fan, and I was like, "Hey, you like Janet Leigh? Let's watch the Vikings." And she was like, "This movie looks stupid." I was like, okay.
Nah, it's not a woman's film.
I know. I was kind of.
I have to get that Blu-ray.
I got the Kino Blu-ray, but no, I was joking. I wasn't like seriously, but I was like, hey, you like Janet Leigh? What about the Vikings with Kirk Douglas? Huh? And she was like,
I think it's telling when they made that Hitchcock movie. You know, they got Scarlett Johansson to play Janet Leigh.
Oh yeah.
And I guess if you were to name the hottest blonde in movies today, I guess most people would say Scarlett Johansson. Mm. So it's like they just got her because she's, you know, the number one.
And I think Scarlett Johansson's overrated.
She's kind of dead behind the eyes.
That's what I was going to say.
To sound sexist, but and no. I mean she's good looking.
No, she is. I'm not saying like
I'm straight. She's good looking.
People would go like, you wouldn't turn that down. Of course not.
Exactly.
But
I just
in movies she has this flat affect, like she just seems like she looks more robotic as she gets older.
Yeah.
And like she's cast in the Ghost in the Machine live action thing. I'm like, of course she is, because she looks like a robot.
She's not expressive. She's just like there's no expression.
In fact, you know, she was a lot more expressive when she was chubbier in movies like Ghost World.
I agree. And she's even less now. She's stiffer and stiffer.
Like,
it's like
she's kind of frumpy in Ghost World, but I thought she was super cute in that movie because she looked like, you know.
Well, you were also probably the same age as her.
I was. That movie came out when I was in high school.
I was older. I was like in my 30s. I was like, oh god, it's like looking at kids.
Oh yeah, yeah. You would have been a pervert. No. Because that movie,
these girls are hot at all.
That was a high school movie that came out when I was in high school with people who looked like they were in high school. So I was the perfect age.
It's funny. I liked it a lot then. I don't think I'd care for it now.
I loved that movie when I was in high school. I thought it was the greatest.
Have you revisited?
Not in a while, not in like 5 years.
Yeah, my batting average with revisiting movies from just like 15 years ago is bad.
Bad, bad. No, I'm with you.
The exception is Kung Fu Hustle. But I think Stephen Chow did is gets better every time I watch it.
But I will say, though, there are things about Ghost World that I love, like how it sort of trashes modern art.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. Was it what's her name? Thora Birch character. She draws this like really detailed caricature of Don Knotts. And it's like really detailed. Like she put a lot of effort into it. And the teacher's like, oh, that's cute, you know? And then this girl in the class puts a tampon in a teacup and she's like, oh, how conceptually interesting. You know? Or, look, a mess of coat hangers. What are you trying to say about women's reproductive health? You know? Like it's just it had a lot of stuff like that I thought was really funny then and I think is funny now because it's even more like abrasive now that political correctness is.
Oh yeah, it's. I went to the Chicago Museum of Fine Art, and everything was great until I got to the modern art section.
And it's just
laughable nonsense.
It's trash. It's all trash.
It's junk. It is so junk. It's like, can you name an artist you really dug after Frank Frazetta? No, really can't. It's like because commercial art is discouraged.
Glenn Danzig would say Simon Beasley, but
Simon Beasley. Yeah, he captures the savagery of what's his character? Satanica.
Satanica.
Yeah, that's like Satanica.
Demonica.
It's like Simon really captures the power. You know,
Simon Beasley does a lot of the. Covers for Danzig records and his.
I mainly grew up with him being a Judge Dredd cover artist.
Yeah, he did a lot of the Judge Dredd stuff. Yeah,
right. I mean, and I'm not talking about comic book artists because obviously there's a lot that I love, like Neil Adams and Steranko. I'm talking about like paintings. Yeah, I always think Frazetta, you know, and I like Steranko's paperback covers. He did some really great paintings of the shadow,
and like Frazetta, like when he did a movie poster, you know, like he made Clint Eastwood's The Gauntlet look 50 million times better than it was.
Oh, that movie wasn't nearly as cool as that poster.
The poster's fucking awesome. But the movie's like, what?
Oh, the movie is shit.
Yeah, it's like, whatever.
It's got the scene everybody talks about where you got 100 Arizona State Troopers shooting a bus. Not one bullet hits a tire.
No. That would be too realistic.
And supposedly a production guy on it actually asked Eastwood, shouldn't you have a scene where they shoot the tires? And he goes, nah, nobody pays attention to that.
It was Clint Wood.
Apparently. Yeah. Like, damn it, it's over. We got the take done. But, yeah.
Well, he's a one-take Eddie.
Yeah, he is. And, you know, he was like a Jess Franco. But it's that movie is nowhere near as good as that poster. The poster's incredible.
No, the poster, you want that on your wall. It's awesome.
That poster was ripped off by the Mad Max poster. That's why everybody thinks that Frazetta did the Mad Max poster.
Yeah, because it's got that same pose.
Exact same like wrecked vehicle, and there's like a dead arm. Listen, I mean, I have to look at it again, but it's got a lot of detail.
The only thing that's missing is the broad, you know.
Right. All that's missing is the broad, and it's like, and I don't. They've never found out who the artist was that did the Mad Max poster.
Really?
It's and some people mistakenly think it's Frank Frazetta, but it's not.
No, it's not.
And I can tell it's not Frazetta. It's not.
No,
his style.
If you have any eye for that kind of thing, you know it's not Frazetta.
Right, and it's funny because it's mistaken for that. But I said there was a dude at my gym had that goddamn Mad Max poster tattooed on his back.
Of course. Every time I go to the gym, everybody's got a ton of tattoos except me.
Oh yeah, I don't have any. I don't care. I'm old enough to equate that with you're crazy if you get tattooed.
Well, I just saw it as conformity.
It is.
And and people get really offended when you talk shit about tattoos. Yeah. I'm, you know, but I just saw it. Everybody's getting them, so I just saw it as totally conformist.
It is. It's a trend, and
I feel like I'm more individualistic by not getting a tattoo.
You are. It's like now I've noticed that women are praised who are like models, or let's say they're bikini contest contestants because they don't have tattoos.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, what a pretty girl, no tattoos.
Yeah. And yeah.
I mean, really, seriously, it's like if there is like, Does Playboy still have nude models or centerfolds?
Nope. I saw Playboy at the checkout counter next to Time at Barnes & Noble recently.
Oh, wow. You can sell it in grocery stores now.
Yeah, you could sell it in grocery stores. They got rid of nudes, so...
Wow, because I know that, last time I looked at one was like 15, 16 years ago. And I was just like, wow, you know, when there's a centerfold that doesn't have a tattoo, it's amazing.
Yeah.
But they around the 90s, they started allowing tattoos and piercings. It was like, yuck.
It's like
I don't want to look like some skank I can go pick up in Delta, Louisiana at Daiquiri World.
I mean, isn't that what Suicide Girls is for?
Yes, exactly. Please, diversify your market there.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, come on. I thought it was supposed to be Girl Next Door. This is the girl at the bar.
Yeah. This is Barmaid.
Yes. Gone are the fresh face girls. Here's Candy the stripper. They found it at Rick's in Houston. Yeah.
But you know what movie has no tattoos is The Naked Spur.
Yes, the no tattoos, because people didn't get that stuff back then.
No. And
Janet Leigh. It's total like Larry King type movie.
And it this movie feels very pulpy in that when I say pulpy, I don't mean just like violent. I mean like it feels very sparse and low budget, but in a good way.
Yeah.
Because like you said, it was all outdoors. There's no like, you know, inns, there's no saloons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no cook named Cookie.
In fact, you know, like a recent movie you could compare it to would be The Revenant a little bit.
Yeah, actually you could, and it's a way better movie than The Revenant.
Yeah, it's much better. Yeah, I'm not saying it's anywhere, you know, The Revenant's anywhere near that quality.
Well, people who praise stuff like The Revenant never watch old westerns.
No, they don't. And, you know, but it is like, you know, Jimmy Stewart's tracking people and, you know, they get that, like... One of the big enemies in the movie is nature, you know, the river scene at the end.
Right.
Like, you know, takes out several characters, you know.
Yeah, what I like is it's a situation movie.
Yeah.
Like Speed. I mean, it's very similar to Speed in that it's almost like this will all fall apart in a second.
Yeah.
You've got characters manipulating each other based on the flimsiest of personas and lies.
Totally.
And manipulations, and it's kind of like, you really wish there were more movies like this made.
Yeah, it's all because it's a Western where, you know, there is gunplay in it, but it's mostly manipulation and wordplay that people
right.
are
it's
using
got its
against
action.
Each other. Yeah, totally.
It's got
I mean,
action. Like James Stewart's the toughest he's ever been in a movie.
And like Jimmy Stewart's climbing cliff faces to try, like, because when they first encounter Robert Ryan, he's throwing rocks at he's pushing rocks down a cliff, and so they have to make it up the cliff and get him without getting killed by falling rocks, and it's a pretty exciting sequence. And then the river scene at the end is really exciting as well. But you have this middle act where, you know, you have this guy who basically flat out says to Janet Leigh, my plan is to, you know, is to pit them against each other. Like he uses the money to, you know, make the group fall apart. Like, cause the whole time this guy who's a total jerk is a complete liability. You're sitting there and you can see James Stewart written on his face the whole time that he knows he's in a horrible situation that could blow up in his face. Like, he does feel like Keanu. It does feel like Speed, where this guy is a bomb that's with this group that could go off.
Yeah.
And it's no surprise that the script by Sam Rolfe and Harold Bloom was nominated for an Oscar.
Which was a surprise when I looked that up.
And, you know, you don't see a lot of Westerns getting that sort of praise.
No. If it wasn't Shane or something by John Ford, it just didn't get that type of acclaim back then. And also, it's like the almost like 90% of the film seems filmed outdoors in Durango. Mm-hmm. And
there's a few cave sequences, you know.
Right. It's like you can tell by the sound stages pop in. But it also, like, anytime you have a night scene, that's always a sign of a sound stage.
Oh, absolutely. Concerts.
But it's like, if you compare that to the way Westerns were made in the 40s, and probably some of a lot of their contemporary stuff, you know, it seems like they were always filmed in Bronson Canyon or over at the Ray Corrigan Ranch in Southern California.
It always cracked me up in John Ford Westerns when Monument Valley was Texas. It's like, there's nowhere in Texas that looks like this.
Oh, I know. And I've actually, I was saying to somebody today, I was like, yeah, I used to be like, I only watch Italian Westerns. I didn't really like American Westerns.
I used to be that way, too. When I was in college, it was like, spaghetti Westerns are number one, fuck Hollywood, you know?
Because they're like heavy metal albums brought to life.
Oh, absolutely!
Like, yeah, that's all. They're so dark, and, you know, the action is so good and everything.
And like,
but now, you
watch, like, The Great Silence, and they've got these crazy Mauser guns.
And, oh, yeah. Almost any Django movie is, like...
You got a fucking coffin with a minigun.
Yeah, it's a guy gun. You don't even know if he's real, if he's, like, a ghost killing people.
Oh, you know what? You know what movie is... Spaghetti Western was like that was Django Kill, Julio Questi's movie.
Yeah, it's insane.
That movie's like a fucking Buñuel film.
It is. But the thing is, like, once I lived in Colorado and drove around New Mexico and Wyoming and Colorado quite a bit, suddenly I can no longer accept Spain.
Oh no,
as American West. I can't do it. I have a hard time watching those.
When I watch spaghetti Westerns, I always think of them the way I think of, like, Lord of the Rings. Like, it's fantasy.
Yeah,
it is. It's like Stephen King's, like, Dark Tower or something.
Right.
Like, I always think of them as fantasy movies. Like,
the only exception is the Trinity movies.
Yeah, Trinity. Yeah, exactly. But, like, you know, you watch a movie, even, like, a Franco-Italian Western, like Cemetery Without Crosses.
Right.
You know, that movie is so, you know, they're really strange and surreal. Like, you know, the Robert Hossein character lives in a ghost town. He's just like, the lady goes to a ghost town and he's hanging out there. You know, like, it's like that clearly didn't happen, but they were like, that Robert Hossein was watching Italian Westerns and went, ooh, I like that feel, you know?
Right.
But you watch American Westerns and they're more in touch with the landscape because they're made there.
Right.
Even though The Searchers, Monument Valley is Texas, it still feels like America, you know?
Right, right. And that's what I liked about this, is it feels like, oh, wow, this is like... First of all, just filmed in my state is cool enough.
Yeah, and totally. And
it's also like, I know what those locations are like. Like, I've been around.
I've spent a lot of time in Lake City, Colorado, a tiny town in the Colorado Rockies, and it looks just like that. Like... It looks like a town from a Western movie, like this. Like, it has the green trees around everywhere, and then you have the snow-capped mountains in the distance. You know, it's very picturesque. And, like, you know, the town, it looks like something from a Western. Like, you have the bank, you've got the bar, you've got the haberdashery.
You know? All you need. The barber, where you can get a shave.
Yeah, it looks like a gold rush town. It's so funny. And but it's so picturesque, and there's nowhere else in the world that looks like that.
Right.
And when you watch The Naked Spur, if you've ever been to Colorado, it feels like Colorado, you know, and parts of, you know, and there are other parts of America that have their own unique feels. Montana has a unique feel, California, Texas, you know, and Texas's feel is exaggerated greatly in movies. It's, you know. It's pretty flat. You go to Big Bend, it feels a little different. But,
right, it's because most movies set in Texas are filmed in Vancouver.
Or California. You know?
Right, California mainly. But yeah, I've never been to Montana, but I have read all the Tom McGuane novels set there. That's all I know about.
You know, if you want to know Texas is through Westerns, read Elmer Kelton's books.
Yes.
Those
are excellent.
Yeah, the time it didn't rain, the one you told me about.
Oh, yeah, that I said should be the big conservative go-to novel.
Not Atlas Shrugged. That book is the, like, fuck big government book, but it doesn't have the sort of pompous shithead attitude that Ayn Rand has.
Right, right. And but, yeah, it's what's cool is, like, you know, it brings up again, what happened to Ralph Meeker and why wasn't he a bigger star?
I was going to ask you that because I watch movies like this. I watch movies like Kiss Me Deadly. I'm like, Ralph Meeker is a fucking awesome actor.
Yeah, and my guess was I looked up a little bit and somebody had said that, okay, Ralph Meeker originated the lead role in Picnic on Broadway, I believe.
Which I was in Picnic in high school.
Yes, and when they made the movie, he turned down that role, and it went to William Holden. Hmm. And everybody thought William Holden was actually wrong for the movie because he was too old for the character or whatever, you know, who knew the stage play. So Ralph Meeker instead did Kiss Me Deadly. Kiss Me Deadly wasn't nearly as big a hit as Picnic. Hmm. And so apparently that led to his trajectory. And I guess he preferred stage work in many ways. So he would always go back to the stage and run in on a stage play for a while.
And you know, I can totally understand that because film work, you're waiting around a lot.
Yeah.
You spend these long hours and you don't get the visceral rush that comes with stage performing.
Exactly.
Being in a play, it's like being a rock star. You have an audience.
Right.
You have that rush that comes with performing your scenes. And afterwards, you have the people applauding for you. It is so much more satisfying than doing films. You know, doing films, you have to wait till it's up on the screen, and it might suck, you know? So, it's pretty funny.
I understand it. Like, all it is waiting around half the time.
Oh, absolutely. I've worked on movie sets, and it's fucking brutal.
Well, I watched the film Prozac Nation in Harvard Square, and all I did was wait around. They just waited and waited while they set up the lights. It was crazy.
Yeah.
But with Meeker, and this is something else I noticed, he aged really quick.
Ooh, really?
Because I sat down with my kid and we watched the movie that started the series, Gentle Ben. The movie isn't called Gentle Ben. I think it's called Gentle Giant or something.
Does it have Clint Howard?
Yeah, Clint Howard's in the movie.
Clint Howard's fucking, he's a man.
And Ralph Meeker is the villain.
Oh.
And Ralph Meeker.
He's a good villain.
And this is in, like, 1967 or whatever. It's not that long after Kiss Me Deadly. It literally looked like he aged 25 years.
Huh.
10. Like, he looks bad. And then he had, and if you see him in the early 70s, he's in the Kolchak the Night Stalker, or the Night Stalker TV movie that started that Kolchak series. And he's unrecognizable. I kept looking at him in that movie going, I know that actor. I've seen him somewhere. And look at the credits, Ralph Meeker, because he has like a terrible comb over and he looks like he's aged a great deal since playing Mike Hammer. And then I found out he had like a stroke in 1980, so he had to retire after that.
Yeah, because I'm looking at his filmography and it says Without Warning was his last movie, and that was in 1980.
That's a sad one to go out on. It was him and Martin Landau and Jack Palance. And
yeah, I remember Scream Factory put it out recently, and it's Jack Palance was in some pretty hideous 80s horror movies. But
he was a send him the paycheck guy.
Yep.
Is your check clear the bank? I'm there. He was like the Samuel Jackson, Nicolas Cage of his time.
I love him. Klaus Kinski. I love him in Compañeros, where he's like smoking pot and talking to his hawk, his pet hawk. But, you know, but he had some really great movies early on. He had Naked Spur. Kiss Me Deadly's his masterpiece.
Yeah.
You had Paths of Glory, one of Stanley Kubrick's best movies.
Mm-hmm. Had some good roles in some TV westerns that I've seen too.
Okay. Oh, Wagon Train.
Mm-hmm.
Wagon Train. I'm seeing that here.
He's great in an episode of The Texan. Fantastic. About the best episode of The Texan I've seen. He did Wanted Dead or Alive. He did a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, but it wasn't. He wasn't the star that he should have been.
Right.
Because you watch Kiss Me Deadly, and he is so good as Mike Hammer. Like, and you know. A lot of people say he was cast to be like kind of stupid and, you know, kind of the odious detective, but he's fucking cool. Like, you,
I know.
I
root for him when he's breaking that geek's opera.
Oh, yeah. Or when he just like grabs a girl and kisses her, you're like, yeah.
He's awesome. What the hell are these egghead critics talking about?
I know. Like, Alex Cox is on the Blu-ray going, and Ralph Meeker plays Mike Hammer, who is a stupid oaf, and it's like, fuck you, Alex, you commie fuck.
Yeah, it's like, you make your boring commie movies that are never released.
Make Repo Chick or whatever.
Oh yeah, let's make a Harry Harrison adaptation in Boulder with no money. Your students.
And, you know, but I do love me some early Alex Cox with, like, Repo Man and all that.
Yeah, Repo Man's fun. Did I tell you that in the Harlan Ellison book, An Edge of My Voice, there's a real negative letter attacking Ellison, and it's signed Alex Cox, Los Angeles?
Yes, I have that book, and yes.
I'm pretty sure it's him. I really think it's him. He's like, Harlan Ellison was kicked out of science fiction circles years ago.
And I even like Sid and Nancy, even though it has a lot of problems, you know.
Oh, a lot of problems. Whitewashing.
Oh, totally. Like, oh,
yeah. I remember him wearing a Nazi shirt.
Yeah. Oh, he's going to wear the hammer and sickle. Whoa.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right.
Shut up.
It really shocks people in England.
And, you know, I like Straight to Hell, too, mm-hmm. which is a weird fucking Western with Joe Strummer.
I've never seen it because I confused it with Lust of the Dust, the Paul Bartel. Getting Western spoof, and I never saw either of them.
It's a really weird movie, but it's got like Joe Strummer and a score by Joe Strummer. Joe Strummer scored a lot of his movies. He also did the Walker score,
right?
But it's very bizarre. Like dudes in suits, like a Jean-Pierre Melville movie, showing up in this Mexican town and drinking coffee and fighting with people.
So he's basically making like a Kill Bill type movie.
It was Tarantino before Tarantino.
Okay.
Like, a lot of people accuse Tarantino of ripping off Straight to Hell, you know, but you could accuse Tarantino of ripping off a lot of movies.
He rips off everything.
Everything. You could say, you could make a list of, like, 50 movies for every Tarantino movie as to what.
Well, did you see his new one, the Hateful Eight, or the...
Mm-hmm.
You saw it?
I saw it in the theater, yeah.
Your opinion?
I thought it was fine. I think it's one of his weaker films, to be honest.
Right. Yeah, I was like, because I was thinking about, well, I heard about the length of that film, I had no interest in it.
Well, it's a lot shorter if you watch it on video because it has the overture and intermission taken out.
Oh, okay, so
it's less than 3 hours.
All right, because what I liked about The Naked Spur, it's like 90 minutes long.
It's 90 minutes.
And this is an Oscar-nominated screenplay. It's 90 minutes.
Totally. It is a short, sweet movie. No, the Hateful Eight, it is too long.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not terrible. It's not. I don't think it's great either. You can kind of tell Tarantino wasn't sure where it was going to go when he was writing it.
Right.
But it has some really good scenes, some good moments. It has some shocking scenes, and the Morricone score is very good. I like the Morricone score just because it's so full of dread and horror. I love that side of it.
And now it's his biggest bomb, I think. It's his first bomb in a while.
Yeah, it was. Tarantino was very upset because, you know, shocking, you release it alongside Star Wars, nobody's going to carry it.
And this is what I didn't get, was he was like, okay, the script leaked out, he was pissed off at everybody, and he's all bitter.
It sounded like you and I were talking about how we thought he leaked it out.
He leaked it. Johnny Ray Gaskin said he leaked it out.
Yeah,
himself.
He had to. It's just, because this has happened with him before.
Because I was like, you know, if it's that severe, why don't you just hire another director to direct it?
Yeah.
Like, why don't you start having protégés? Like, Howard Hawks worked with protégés.
Of course.
It's like
Christian Nyby.
John Carpenter was always trying to, you know, Tommy Lee Wallace. He was supposed to do a Western called El Diablo. He couldn't get the studio to invest in it. HBO agreed to do it. He let Tommy Lee Wallace direct it for HBO.
Yeah.
It's like, there's nothing wrong with that. It's like, why not just do that with your script?
No, a lot of directors, I mean... That's a good thing to do. Take someone under your wing, make them, you know.
How better of a world would it be for movies if William Friedkin did such a thing?
Oh my God, you know who knows what that would have wrought. But the thing is, young William Friedkin would have had to been tolerable to be around for a long period of time.
I would stand him. It would have been worse than
he would have beaten that person
sharks.
To death at some point.
or just, like, that person would have strangled him.
Exactly.
So, simply by the younger muscles, strangling Billy Friedkin.
But The Naked Spur is a pretty, it's a short, sweet movie, and it's full of, it's a very, like, deep but restrained performance from Stewart. Like, you get a hint as to his past.
Yeah.
But you mostly extract it from his performance.
Well, in one particular scene, I thought that's the first time I noticed maybe the earliest example of post-traumatic stress disorder. Back then, they used to call it battle fatigue.
Or shell shock.
Yeah.
you know, in the horrible one.
It was called battle fatigue, I think, before it was called shell shock.
Yeah.
And they kind of had that with Stewart's character, where he was just having the visions and everything.
Yeah. Like,
that had me thinking, okay, so he's got the problems, and they're kind of addressing it without being gratuitous about it. Because
he has these crazy dreams in one scene.
Because there's no doubt coming back from the service of World War II inspired a lot of filmmakers.
Oh, absolutely. And so, Stewart was in World War II.
Yes, he was. He was like a champion pilot.
Yeah, and what was funny, he went to World War II, and when he came back, he thought he wasn't going to be able to act anymore.
I know.
He thought he
weird?
Couldn't do it. He was like, I thought I lost it, you know.
Right. It's like, it's strange, because it was like him and Ed McMahon were like bombing the bad guys.
Oh, yeah. I mean, God, it's the kind of lives these guys led were amazing.
I know. I feel so unmanly. Just
I know. I feel like a fucking pussy.
Lord, I'm a wuss.
I know. Like, people kind of think of Jimmy Stewart as like, oh, hello, I'm Jimmy Stewart. Yeah. You know? Yeah. But Jimmy Stewart was a fucking man, dude.
Yeah. Like, in a reality, he's more of a man than any of those guys in the fucking UFC.
I mean, he's more of a man than John Wayne. I mean, not John Wayne, but, like, you know, he's on that level with John Wayne.
Right.
You know?
It's like John Wayne, he went to the service. Him and Bogart both.
Yeah, Bogart was in the service.
Charles Bronson.
Bronson, yeah.
A lot of Roger Moore.
Oh, Roger Moore, who a lot of people are shocked when they hear he's older than
Connery,
yeah.
Yeah, didn't matter when he was cast because they were only 10 years into the Bond movies.
Yeah, they were only 10 years but Moore looked younger than Connery when he did Live and Let Die. Connery was going bald and, you know.
Oh, yeah. Connery needed a toupee in Dr. No.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch Tarzan's Greatest Adventure, which was made before Dr. No, like by a couple of years, Connery's the pattern baldness is right there. Character. He's a villain in that film, which actually reminds me of a really funny thing about The Naked Spur. The follow-up to Tarzan's Greatest Adventure was Tarzan the Magnificent. It was the last Gordon Scott Tarzan movie. And I mostly made with British talent, like a British director and everything, and actually filmed parts in Africa. And the script is actually a thinly disguised remake of the Naked Spur.
Really?
Yes, it is the Naked Spur, basically rewritten as a Tarzan movie.
That is so funny. I need to go and watch that.
Which I think I actually called it The Naked Prey, which is another great film that was made just a few years later.
Yeah, that's one that's on Criterion, right?
Yeah. Well, it was. I think it's out of print now.
I don't think it is.
Oh, you don't think it is?
No, because I was looking. Let me see. Naked Prey.
Fantastic Cornell Wilde movie, but I've noticed the Criterion seem to, like, I don't think they put it out on Blue.
No, I think it's been a DVD. Yeah, you can get it. Okay. It's on Prime. But yeah, it's only on DVD.
But Masters of Cinema put it out on Blue, so I'm going to...
Oh, Masters of Cinema has been going after my heart. I just got the Day of the Outlaw on Blu-ray from them.
Right. That's because they want Mr. Aroshelf to be Mr. Masters of Cinema Shelf.
Yeah, exactly. And I have their Touches End Blu-ray.
How's that? You watch it?
Not yet. I watched Dragon Inn, though, and that one was beautiful.
I have Dragon Inn sitting on my shelf. That's the one I've been watching.
It's so good.
I know.
But no, I'm going to watch Touches End soon. It's just a matter of sitting down for 3 hours, you know.
But yeah, it is funny. Tarzan in the Gordon Scott film is basically playing... he's playing Jimmy Stewart's character without the crazy past.
But is the crazy past when the PTSD he has?
They should have put that in there.
Does it go back to him going, now Tarzan make war?
Yeah. Well, Ghani, no. No, man, Ghani. You will not make war today in the jungle. For I am the lord of the jungle. And my law is law. Or whatever. Jack Mahoney is basically the Robert Ryan character.
Oh, okay.
And Jack Mahoney took over the Tarzan series after Gordon Scott finished Tarzan the Magnificent.
Oh, I didn't know that. I have to go watch that now.
Yeah, it's a really good movie, but you're gonna laugh when you see the comparisons to the Naked Spur. If you compare it to the Naked Spur, it's really funny.
That's
they
funny.
Literally like just did a very thin lift of the. Of the movie and changed it around, you know, not just the setting, but they changed the plot stuff.
Right.
But it ends with a great fight in like a waterfall. Yeah. It's just a really cool fight scene.
This one ends in a river with giant logs smashing people's heads
in. Oh, it's hilarious how they just kind of pretty much, and there's probably been other movies that have ripped off the script of The Naked Spur.
Yeah.
And it's like, because it's that good of a raw story and a situation action.
Yeah,
film.
It's so simple.
just like the Raid and Fury Road, it's these kind of simplistic settings that just the action drives forward the story. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, it's just it's guy picks up dude picks up some people, and there's conflict over money. You know,
yeah.
it's a very, you know, it's almost like it has plenty of action. Like there's that Indian battle sequence in the middle where they get attacked by the Blackfeet who are chasing Ralph Meeker's character.
Yeah.
But it's built in tension through dialogue.
Yeah.
You know, and it's very strong. Like this is a movie that like I went back and revisited it, and I was like, yep, that was 90 minutes well spent.
And I think it's one of those movies should be taught in film classes.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially screenwriting.
And I think that's a reason Scorsese brought it up.
Yeah.
Was because when he brought it up, that it was, you know, you could probably find it on VHS, but it was not available on DVD because I looked for it for years. I was kept checking to see if The Naked Spur was available. And when it finally came out, I snatched it up and watched it. Because I wanted to see it just based on the strength of that little clip he showed, just seeing Jimmy Stewart kind of rage for that moment at the end, at the climax. I was like, I have to see Jimmy Stewart in this role. It's just got to happen.
Yeah.
And then I went and watched other Anthony Mann movies like Winchester 73. I have the Criterion edition of The Furies.
Mm-hmm.
Man of the West is a very good one.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've seen any other ones. That might be it. I need to see some of it. I've seen, you know, El Cid and Fall of the Roman Empire.
Right. Well, you can only get 55 Days of Peking through a Blu-ray from, I think, Spain.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. But, I mean, you could find it on Amazon. Amazon UK has it for a decent import price.
Listen.
And American Amazon has it super jacked up on the price.
Listen, I support Donald Trump. I'm not supporting Spain.
Spain, they're kicking our ass.
They're our ass.
55 Days of Peking on Blu-ray. Where is America?
We need to bring 55 Days of Peking to America.
They're issuing Charlton Heston movies we're not putting out on DVD and Blu-ray. They're kicking our ass.
They're kicking our ass. I think Spanish people are wonderful. I have many Spanish friends. However, we need to fight back.
I mean, it's just it's weird. It's that so much of these like classic American movies, and I've noticed this is more of a trend. They're out on Blu-ray in England and Spain, and
it's funny. Like I think Masters of Cinema lately has been kicking Criterion's butt when it comes to
they have out. Oh, Criterion responded by announcing Touches In.
Yeah, they put out. They're going to put out Touches In. But I've already got the Masters of Cinema one, and I was like, oh.
Yeah, I'm going to wait for the Criterion.
Yeah,
because it's more affordable.
You'll save money. Yeah,
yeah, the UK version on Amazon UK is just super overpriced.
It is. I had just gotten paid when I bought it. So I was like, fuck it, I don't care.
I have a family. I don't get paid at all.
Exactly. I'm single, so it's...
It goes into the family household.
So all my money goes into my stupid hobbies.
Yes, you better enjoy your time, Hunter, because it don't last.
I know. I'm gonna, you know, start hoarding money for when I, you know, impregnate someone.
Yeah, your fun money, but
exactly.
Oh Lord, but yeah, this is actually The Naked Spur is one of the rare times I would say if you have a VCR and you can find the VHS tape, that's a better alternative than watching the DVD.
Well, that's a interesting point. Next time I'm at Movie Trading Company, I will look for it on VHS.
Yeah, I swear it looked better on VHS.
The DVD just and here's the thing: I don't want the listeners who haven't seen it to ignore the DVD because you know this is a good movie. You should watch it. The DVD is not unwatchably bad, but you look at it and you go, "This needs a restoration."
Right.
It needs somebody to go through and restore it. It just hasn't happened. I think they just put it out, and it just doesn't look good.
But, yeah, there has to be something done with the calibration of that Technicolor.
Yeah, because the colors are just not what they could be.
No. Real disappointment. Yeah. But it's still, if you see the DVD, I got it at Big Lots for like $3.
Yeah, I got it for $8.
Yeah, I consider that money well spent.
So what would you give this movie, John?
I would give it a very solid 8.
I give it a solid 8 as well.
Yeah.
We're in agreement.
I think that's it's definitely worth seeking out. Even if you think, oh, Jimmy Stewart's that cornball. No, you need to see this movie.
No, like, you got it. And check out Winchester 73 as well. That's another very good Western with Jimmy Stewart. Jimmy Stewart's one role in that movie, it's actually like the story of a gun. You know, have you seen it?
I haven't seen it. I actually have a copy of it. Have not seen it yet. I it's been sitting on my shelf of the backlog of stuff to watch.
Well, go watch that, and maybe we'll do a show on that someday.
Yeah, we definitely should.
Because Stewart is, you know, he's an actor with many more faces to him, and you know, right. He can be more than just the honest, you know, all-American guy. He could, and you know, and I like those roles. I like the honest all-American guy because that's an ideal I enjoy. But I also like the dark, sort of tortured heroes that he was very good at playing, like this one.
Yeah, he's really good at that. It's like, and I like his other roles too, because it's like, you know, it's a nostalgia for the America that may have never been.
Oh yeah, the you know what? It's the America Frank Capra wanted to see.
Yes, you know? Exactly.
And Frank Capra was a very like idealistic conservative guy. You know, he believed in, you know, the little guy going to Washington and making a difference for...
Yeah. Oh, boy. Misinformed everybody for decades.
I know, right?
There's no hope.
Yeah, the Jimmy Stewart of the Naked Spur is definitely more enlightened than the Jimmy Stewart of Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Just because of the Naked Spur, Jimmy Stewart's like, battle fatigue, war weary, smart to the world.
And all he cares about's the money!
it's so well worth watching.
You can get it for $8.99 on Amazon, so
it's worth it, even though we've kind of put down the DVD quality.
Even though we put it down, it's worth picking up if you don't have a VHS player.
Definitely.
So I would definitely get that. All right. Well, go visit us at www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. Hopefully we'll have Stu with us back this week. Check us out on iTunes, leave us a review, rate us, and subscribing and doing those things really helps the show. So if you want to help the show, that's a good way to do it.
Yeah, we need our profile boosted.
Yes, we do.
And we need new adjectives other than idiotic racist.
Yeah, of course. Not that they're inaccurate, but... No.
I don't run from those labels.
Do you have anything else, John?
Also check out phantomsway.com.
Yeah, phantomsway.com, our sister
sister site. They host our show on Mondays where we kick off a week-long series of podcasts, and they've actually had some new articles they're putting up. They got some new writers contributing some really cool stuff. There's an article on the Gill Man for the Creature of the Black Lagoon on the Phantom Sway.
Yeah, right. I'm always impressed by the content I see from them, cuz they're not like other websites that just sort of do the same, like, kind of listicles and sort of trying to grab as many seem to just kind of do sort of left field interesting stuff.
It's not a clickbait site.
No, and you know, that's what everybody's doing. Like, even you read like old, you know, newspapers now, they're doing the clickbait articles. It's like, oh god, you know?
Oh, it's terrible. The worst is the superhero movie exploitation. That's like, Robert Downey Jr. may or may not be in the next Marvel movie.
Oh, he may or may not be in Spider-Man.
He's considering. Michael Keaton talking with Marvel at lunch at, you know, Dr. Wild's barbecue pit.
Oh,
it's just all this really just vaguely. So my favorite is Superman versus Batman as a bomb.
Yeah, which it's not.
No, it's like there's all these for weeks.
It's a massive success. They're
$700 million.
I'm sorry,
Jesus.
If it was a bomb, do you think Ben Affleck would be doing a standalone Batman movie?
Right. Oh, everybody's so disappointed. No, everybody I talk to who doesn't spend their lives on Facebook actually kind of likes
it. My friends who have seen it all kind of have the same opinion I do. It was pretty good.
Yeah,
I had a lot of problems, but it was pretty good.
It was still fun. It's a, you know.
Did I tell you that the guy who played the dude in the wheelchair came to speak at my school that I teach at?
No.
Yeah, Scoop McNairy. He's in all of Ben Affleck's movies. Like he was in Argo. and stuff. Mm-hmm. He was one of the people hiding out from the embassy. Mm-hmm. But he plays the dude in the wheelchair in the movie. And he came to speak at my school because he was a student there way back when. And it was funny. They were like, he's been in this movie. Like, he was in Monsters. They were like, he's going to be in Batman versus Superman. And after he gives this little speech, because he's like, he talked about how he's dyslexic and how, like, he said most actors take this long to read a script. He said it takes me hours, and he said it takes me like hours and hours, and I have to make notes and all that stuff. And he was talking about how much extra work it is, and he was talking about it because my school is mostly caters to that. And he said that, he talked about his career in acting, and they showed clips from his movies and all that. And the first question a kid asked was, who are you in Batman versus Superman? He goes, that is the one question I am not allowed to answer. I am so sorry. He goes, I am under strict orders to not say anything.
Yeah. Well, that's what happened to the chick they originally cast as Wonder Woman.
Yeah, yeah. That she opened her mouth.
She ran her mouth and got fired from the role.
Yep, and so Gal Gadot got the part.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, Warner Brothers takes that stuff seriously.
Yeah, they do, and you know, good for them for fucking, you know, bringing the hammer down.
Yeah.
But I thought that was pretty funny, though. He's like, yeah, I can't answer that question. Sorry, kid. Well, anyway, anything else, John?
That's it. Just plug in the Phantom's Way. Got the killer screening coming up next month, the Alamo Draft House.
Oh, boy. Yeah, you'll have to tell us all about that.
Yeah, we actually got a tap house.
If you're a MMC listener in Denver, go say hi to John when that happens.
If you're in the Colorado area, if you're in Denver or it's surrounding Littleton, or even Colorado Springs, come to the Alamo Draft House in May. Look on the calendar. We have a screening of The Killer.
Very cool.
And there will be a limited edition glass to celebrate the screening. And we're going to have beer and John Woo violence.
It's not called the Draft House for no reason. There's going to be blood and beer on tap.
Right. And we tied it. We got a limited edition tap going for this thing with the tap house. So it's like, it's cool.
Sweet. All right, everybody. Well, with that, I will say adios.
And mahalo.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.